Okay, we're ready to start in 3, 2. Hello and welcome to the Cult Cast, episode 12. Let's start that over again. Are we at episode 12? We're not at episode 12.
Well, let's go with it. Roll with it.
Hello and welcome to the Cult Cast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. Let's be honest. I'm here with Buster Hine, as usual, Leander Caney joining us once again. Welcome back, Leander.
Thank you, everyone.
And we're also joined by Alex Heath, Cult of Back writer. Hello, Alex. Welcome back to the show.
Hey.
We are coming back from the longest pre-show discussion ever about absolutely nothing, and we're ready to start the show. Let's just jump right into it, guys. I thought we could start with some light news, just to kind of break the ice here. And then jump into some more meaty topics. That sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. So, first story of the day. 1/3 of U.S. high school students now own an iPhone. And I thought this was interesting for two reasons. One, the fact that U.S. high school students have iPhones. And two, the fact that their parents are paying for these data plans that come along with these iPhones. I know you guys just read the story. Leander, you have kids. Do you think this is strange that U.S. high school students, 1/3 of U.S. high school students, would carry around iPhones with them?
Well, yeah, I was surprised by the number. I mean, 1/3 is a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it's a ton of kids.
It is, yeah, it's a lot. And you're right about the data plans. You know, my daughter's got a hand-me-down old iPhone 3G, I think it is. It's got... The screen, you know, is all cracked up completely.
Not to mention, it's probably abysmally slow, right?
Well, it doesn't really matter, you know, for what she... I mean, she's using it for texting and for Facebook and music and, you know, and every month she blows through the data plan. It's, like, unbelievable.
Oh, wait, so can you not set a limit on the data plan and just be like, she can't go over this?
Well, you know, I hate to reveal my ignorance in public, but if you can, I don't know how to do it.
I don't know if you can, to be honest with you.
I don't believe.
No, because then the carriers want, they don't want you to have a limit, for God's sake.
They want you to go over.
Oh, they're like, have all you can.
Yeah, you went over, it's okay, we'll just charge you 10 gigs, or 10 bucks for a gig.
You know, it's interesting, I thought that on the limited plans, the 2 gig and the 3 gig plans... that they would warn you first, and then if you wanted to pay for more data, you could. Is that not the way it works? Because I have an unlimited plan, so I've never had to deal with that. Do they just automatically charge you for more data?
Yeah.
Oh, they do, and they don't warn you or anything? They're just like, hey, we're just going to keep charging you.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah, no, they're pretty good about the warnings. I mean, you know, I'm getting an email every day now, like, you're pushing your data limit, you better cut your daughter off. But, you know, it's like, okay, so we tell her, but then, you know, it runs over.
Oh, yes, especially for, like, junior high and high school kids. I mean, they have absolutely no, like, comprehension of consequences, and a lot of them don't understand money. It's like, to have them be policing their own data seems absolutely absurd, especially with text messages.
Well, you know, my daughter's very sensible. She's actually much better at managing her, you know, affairs than I am.
I believe that.
I'd rather put her in charge of my data plan. But, you know, like, there's so much going on. It's like iCloud, backups, you know, she's got my Spotify account. And she sends, like, about a bajillion text messages to her friends every day. They actually don't account for much data. But, you know, I mean, you know, like everyone else, she's on this thing all the time. And it's polling. It's like, you know, GPS. It's like checking in. She's always losing it. So I always didn't find my iPhone. You know, the thing's a busy little machine.
Sure. And it can do so much. And what seems crazy to me, I mean, the data plans are per device. So, I mean, Leander, you have 4 kids, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if they all had iPhones, you're spending, you know, hundreds of dollars a month just for their data plans.
Right,
parents are doing that for their kids? That just seems outrageous to me.
See, I want to know who they surveyed, and I feel like those kids were lying on that survey, because all the kids, 34% said they have an iPad, too, as well.
Really? I wonder if they're just like, yeah, my dad has an iPad, so that means it's mine.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering.
Huh.
Survey conducted in Connecticut, and that's it. I mean, I don't know.
There you go.
In the Upper West Side of New York City.
Honestly, you guys are surprised by that number. I'm surprised it's not more.
Really?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like half. I wouldn't be surprised if it was half.
Well, I would.
I would too. I mean, remember when you guys were in high school? I was in high school, I might be dating myself. It's like, dude, I had to pay for my own cell phone if I wanted to. They're really expensive. Not to mention, if you're not 18, you can't get a plan by yourself.
Yeah.
So it's like, for a high school student to be spending, you know, $100 a month or $80 a month on a cell phone, that's a lot of money. If you have a minimum wage job, you're making like $60 a week, right? Like, you're not making very much money at all, especially if you're working part time.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I mean, just be realistic, you know, Irfan, you know, when you were in high school, you were wearing, you know, your pants above your belly button and all this stuff. And now,
that's
nowadays,
true.
You know,
I still do that, though. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
I think I'm the closest to those days as far as, you know, remembering. And I, you know, it's not a stretch at all for me to think that, you know, the majority, it's just the cool thing to, you know, have now. It's like the hot gadget. It's everyone wants one, you know.
Yeah, no one wants to see off.
And so these kids will, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if these kids are like negotiating with their parents. Okay, well, here, cut this, or let's, you know, don't give me, you know, whatever allowance, that much allowance, if I can have an iPhone, you know, just let me have an iPhone.
Damn. And I'll tell you what, if this were my kid and my kid was like, Papa, I want an iPhone, because that's how my kid will address me. I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's make a deal. Like, you can never go over, and you'll be doing literally all the chores in the house. Anything that I want you to do, you will be doing.
Child slave.
Sound like Foxconn.
Yeah, it's going to be like an intern at Foxconn.
With a British accent.
They're going to be doing all the work and handling iPhones all day. And not getting paid. That's a terrible joke.
That's not
that. Was terribly insensitive. Too soon, Airfon.
Yeah, it is too soon. Well, as long as we're on the issue of hardware, let's move on to a more recent rumor. I think this came out today, actually. Apple is going to be releasing an iTV called an iPanel, and it's going to cost $1,250. This comes from analyst Peter Misek. I apologize, Peter, if I'm saying your last name incorrectly. This seems amazing to me. They didn't say how big the panel was going to be. They just said it was going to look a lot like an iMac, or basically like the Apple Cinema Display, right? Is that still what they're calling it, the Cinema Display?
Right.
I wish I could afford one. And that seems really low in cost to me, first of all. And second of all, the term iPanel, and a lot on the web seem to agree with this, just seems a little non-Apple-ish, you know? It doesn't seem very sexy at all.
I disagree a little bit on that.
Okay, why?
Well, I mean, you have iPad, iPhone, and iPods. I mean, at least you're keeping with it I and then a P word. Yeah. I mean, it is three syllables, which is why it's a little bit odd. But I don't know. I could see it actually working, even though I don't really like it. I didn't like iPad either.
I hated the name iPad when it came out.
I mean, come on. I mean, everybody hated iPad. Everybody's making the MaxiPad jokes and everything, but, like, that works. But, like, iPanel, I mean, are we getting this at Lowe's? Like, I don't...
People
I don't,
said the I, same thing about the iPad, like, the exact same thing. No, we're like, no I, way, iPad, they're not going to call it that.
But iPad for a tablet, I mean, actually makes sense. I mean, it's not, like, what people thought, but it makes sense. But, like, iPanel for a TV, the word panel, you know, doesn't say anything about... You
flat
know,
panel being, TV, whatever.
Well, why can't it just be ITV?
Because of what is it? Copyright on the ITV trademark or whatever.
Yeah, but that never stopped happening in the past, you know.
I know.
iPhone was also copyrighted trademark.
I'm
just saying it's not completely out of the question that they could do it. I don't like it, and I hope they don't. But I'm just saying it's, you know, it could happen.
I think ITV is the way to go. I mean, what else are you gonna call it? You know, like.
No, definitely. Yeah.
Simple and...
Well, I think one of the arguments was that it's going to be a lot more than just a TV, so they're trying to come up with a name that, you know, kind of, like, you know, has that meaning of, like, it's not just a TV, it does all these different new and crazy things. And iPanel just seems like something to me that would be kind of expected, so... I guess we'll find out about that. I think what surprised me more than the name is the cost. I mean, $1,250 for an Apple for an iPanel, doesn't that seem low to you guys?
Yeah, that's not terrible. I mean, it's not like $4,000 like I would expect, you know.
No, I think $1,250 is really
super
really
cheap.
Super cheap. I mean, for an Apple product, that seems underpriced to me.
Yeah, that's attractive for sure.
I mean, granted, it'll probably be like.
I think it's unreal.
It's going to be like 30 inches.
Yeah.
No, I don't think Apple would put out a TV and it'd be less than $2,000.
Yeah, you know? See, yeah, especially because they're going to be using an IPS panel, don't you think? I mean, it's going to be just like a giant cinema display, would be my guess.
It's going to be holographic.
Yeah. It's going to be holographic, yeah. 3D holographic.
Siri as a woman is going to come out and change your channel.
But just don't ask her to change it, because otherwise she won't understand what you're saying.
Right.
She just changes it to whatever she feels like changing it to.
British people have a
fan. We're going to watch Dance Moms.
Yeah, you're going to watch Dance Moms for the next 2 hours. That's what you're watching.
Can you all imagine talking to your TV, though? Like,
I mean, you already can with your Xbox.
Well, you know, my girlfriend the other night, she was like, oh, have you seen those new Samsung TVs? Like, you talk to it and you wave your hands to control it. And I was like, no, Megan, we're not going to get one of those. That's retarded. But I don't know. It appeals to some people. And if the technology works, then that would be cool.
Yeah, that's the key, if it works.
Yeah.
That really is key, because you guys know how well Siri works right now. I mean, Alex, would you want to have a conversation with your TV about programming?
I mean, I don't know. I would be embarrassed, you know? Like, you know, you
especially
have guilty
those clutch, Alex. Those
yeah.
Put, you know?
Yeah. Put on Japanese porn, Siri.
When I sneak,
if you say
I
it too loud, your neighbors will hear.
When I sneak downstairs at 2 a.m., you know, I don't need to be saying what I'm watching.
Put on Japanese porn, Siri. Did you say, put on Japanese porn? No. Mom.
Shh. Yeah, right.
No, but I mean, really, it's like you come home from a long day and you crash on your couch, and the last thing you want to do is go Netflix, instant queue, scroll.
Well, now come on, it's gonna be like Blade Runner, right? You're gonna be sitting there with a whiskey in one hand and blood flow, you know, pouring out of your nose. And you're gonna be going like, you know, zoom in.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't seen Blade Runner in a long time, so
that where did the blood come from?
Well, it was all beaten up, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh. Yeah, at the end.
Okay. I didn't make the connection there.
That could have just as easily been a British comedy reference.
Right, it does. It sounds like
I really would have loved
big
that.
Big gentleman or something.
Well, hey, let's move on to some more low-hanging fruit. Big news this week. Personally, I'm really excited about. Ashton Kutcher has been reported to have accepted a role as Steve Jobs in a new movie, playing Steve Jobs, obviously. And the movie is going to reportedly be kind of centered around Steve Jobs' early life, like before he'd started Apple, and then, you know, leading up to the time when he had started Apple. And Ashton has reportedly canceled all other projects and feels like this role was meant for him. And dude, I just want to kind of hear what you guys think about A, the premise of the movie. Tell me what you think about that. And then B, tell me if you think that Ashton Kutcher is, you know, well cast for this role. Alex, let's start with you.
Okay, well, I think also the clarification should be made that this isn't Sony's thing. This isn't like the giant budgeted thing that everyone's going
to... No, this that's is a good the, point. So Sony bought the rights to Walter Isaacson's biography to make a movie. Right. And this has nothing to do with that at all. This is an indie film made by director Mark Hulme. And he's been working on this for a while. He was working on this before Steve Jobs passed away. So, yeah, that's a very good point. So, with that said.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate on this. I think people give Kutcher a bad rap. And, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Apple community is going to criticize anyone that is going to be playing Jobs heavily. And honestly, like, what is it about Ashton that really makes people go, oh, you know, like shudder at the thought of it? Like, you know, he's done dramatic stuff. You know, you can go look at his IMDb, you know, he's known for rom-coms and everything and 70s Show and all that stuff. But, you know, he's done, you know, serious stuff. And, you know, I'm a fan of him. You know, I like his work. I don't know. He kind of looks
I can't not laugh at that.
Yeah, I like his work. That, I'm sorry. I think that's a valid point, but that made me chuckle a little bit.
I just
that 70s Show is responsible for, you know, a lot of laughs in my life, okay?
I like Ashton Kutcher.
I would use the word work loosely, but what were you going to say, Buster?
Well, I mean, I like Ashton Kutcher, and I'm looking at his IMDb page, and there's nothing serious on there other than Butterfly what? The Guardian Effect. And Butterfly Effect, which Butterfly Effect wasn't a good movie, Alex. I'm sorry.
It was a good movie.
It
wasn't like a well acted movie. I mean, it was the premise of it that was like good.
Are you kidding me right now? Okay, they could do Dude Where.
Isn't this a guy whose career is really seriously kind of on the skids?
No,
yeah, it is. He's in the new TV show, right? 2 and a Half Men.
Yeah, he's making like reportedly like almost $1 million an episode just for that. So
yeah.
Does anyone watch the show anymore, though? I mean, they only watched it just to see if he could follow Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, I heard that the ratings dropped significantly for that show soon after he started.
Yeah. Not a good idea to step into dead man's shoes, and, you know, I don't mean that.
let's just take his last movies that he made. He's made Spread, which was, you know, nobody watched that. Personal Effects, never even heard of it. Valentine's Day wasn't great. Yes. Killers, come on. No Strings Attached. You only watch that for Natalie Portman. And then New Year's Eve. And that's the only movies he's made in the last 4 years.
New Year's Eve was an incredibly profound human society.
Did that change the way you celebrate New Year's Eve?
Absolutely.
Well, sorry, Leonard, what were you going to say?
Well, the one thing, I mean, if you look at the side-by-sides, though, of him and the young Steve Jobs, I mean, they do look kind of alike.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up that point, because I have been hearing that a ton. And you're right, like, he does look like a young Steve Jobs. He has, like, the weird, scraggly, you know, thin beard, the long hair. But let me offer up my opinion, because I've had this discussion with people about Ashton Kutcher for years. And here's my problem. Actually, I have several. First, I feel like Ashton Kutcher fancies himself like a technocrat, right? Like, he thinks he's super highly technical just because he was one of the first celebrities to have a Twitter account, and he got to go on Oprah's show and show her how to use Twitter. So
he has like a billion followers.
Yeah, he does. But for him to say this is the role I was made for, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not quoting him, but for him to say things like that and think that this role is perfect for him, that just rubs me the wrong way, because I'm like, there's nothing super technical about you that makes you automatically qualified for this role other than any other actor that's out there. I really would have liked to have seen, like, maybe an unnamed actor an unknown actor that we're not familiar with take this role. And I agree with Buster. Like, I feel like Ashton's career has been kind of based on comedy, and it's not because he's a superb actor. He's really good at playing an idiot in movies and TV. That's kind of like been his shtick, right? Like, he plays the idiot and everyone gets a good laugh out of it. But this is a very serious role, and Steve Jobs has a lot of fans. And
Well, they're going to play it for laughs. It's obviously going to be a rom-com,
right? It's going to be a rom-com. Yeah. It's going to be a bromance about a man and his partner, Steve Wozniak, who create a small, quirky computer company that everybody loves.
What if Alec Baldwin played Woz?
Oh, gosh.
That'd be awesome.
That would be great.
Ashton Kutcher is a model turned actor. I'm not saying you can't be a great actor if you were a model, but I'm just saying he's in movies because he has a great looking face. Yes. I would love to be Ashton Kutcher.
I 100%
you know that's
agree
like
with
99%
him.
Of Hollywood, right?
Yeah, totally. But there's also some like good looking guys who are also great actors. You got like right. George Clooney
and then you got guys
Leo.
Like Paul
They're
Giamatti,
awesome.
Right? Like Paul Giamatti isn't winning ugly. Any modeling awards. Like,
yeah,
he's just a great
actor,
right? But yeah. Kevin Spacey, same thing.
So who do you want to play Jobs? I mean, Stanley Tucci? I mean,
I would love Stanley Tucci because he's like the best. At
Noah
all
Wiley.
Of
Noah
I,
Wiley.
I think they should have had Frankie Muniz do it.
Oh, that would be great.
No, he's Noah so Wiley doing
Steve. No, they should have just had Will Smith do it because he's Smith. Awesome at everything.
You know
yeah.
what? I honestly think Will Smith could have done a better job. Dye that man's hair gray, put a turtleneck on him. You could have my $13 right now.
I would totally watch that movie.
I would get there at midnight.
Dressed up in jeans and a turtleneck.
I would camp out for that movie like it's an iPhone event.
Well, can we all agree that the premise of the movie sounds good? Like, I think there's been a lot of movies.
I don't know. It's pretty well-trodden ground, the early days.
Don't you think it's not good, Leander?
Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's a great movie. I really like that movie, actually. I thought that was a pretty good movie.
You know, I admittedly, I haven't seen that movie, but I have friends that have, and they really liked it. Is that movie more about the early days of Steve Jobs?
Yeah, and it's his rivalry with Bill Gates.
Oh, so it's more centered around that.
Yeah.
Okay, so from my understanding, this new movie is supposed to be centered around, like, Steve Jobs and his hippie days and how he stumbled into Apple. Yeah. So in any situation, I'm going to see it. You know, I really hope that Ashton Kutcher, I'm sure he's really psyched about this role, as any actor who's into technology probably would be. I think that he has a unique opportunity to really redeem his career and, you know, really pour himself into this role and come out with an amazing performance. Do you guys remember Ray and the Ray Charles movie? And Jamie Foxx was in that movie, right? And before he was in that movie, he had a career that paralleled Ashton Kutcher's. He was in a lot of goofy movies. He was on In Living Color. He was a comedian. And all of a sudden, he gets put into this role that's very serious, that kind of showcases his piano playing abilities, which no one knew about. And he came out with an amazing performance.
But what's he done since then? That's the other thing.
Was in Collateral with Tom Cruise.
How did I forget about that?
Other than that, I don't know.
See, and that's what I'm saying is, I mean, that was a great performance, but... Yeah. I mean, he really hasn't done too much since then.
But has anyone seen a good biopic? I mean, was that even any good, that Ray Charles one? I saw a bit of it the other night. It was okay. But...
I loved it. I thought the Ray Charles one was good. I thought the Johnny... help me out here. You guys aren't going to come up with the name, are you?
Johnny what?
I can't recall his name. The musician... Ring of Fire. Help me out.
Johnny Cash?
Thank you, Johnny Cash.
With Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, you didn't like that?
No, it was great. He won an Oscar for it, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did, and I thought that was a really good bio. The King's Speech, Leander, King's Speech,
yeah,
a British film, no less.
Leander would hate it because he hates the monarchy.
Yeah, you know, it was all right.
Oh, man, that movie is fantastic.
Well, here's an idea, guys. I was reading an article on my MacBook in public, and I do that every now and then. And there was a picture of Steve Jobs from the 80s, and it's the classic one with his little mop haircut, and he's holding the Apple. And
I know exactly what picture you're talking about.
Yeah, a friend of mine walked by, has no knowledge of Apple or technology, looks at it, and goes, "Is that Tom Cruise?" And I go, "What?" He goes, "What? Is that Tom Cruise? Who is that?" I go, "No, that's Steve Jobs." He goes, "Oh, he looks just like Tom Cruise," and then walks away. And that was a revelation for me.
If he said if it's Ashton Kutcher, that would have been something. But
yeah.
I think the moral of that story is your friend needs to get his glasses adjusted.
I think Tom
is
Cruise
is that Lieutenant Uhura from Star Trek? Cool.
No, dude, Tom Cruise, the last Mission Impossible, he could pull it off.
They had similar hairdos too. You know, like that long, scraggly hippie haircut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he was in Tropic Thunder, he redeemed himself.
Yeah, that's true. Gosh. He was brilliant in that.
I just want to say before we move on, Tropic Thunder, the movie, after I saw it, I was literally depressed for about an hour that I'd wasted so much of my life watching that movie because it was so bad.
I think it's underrated.
Someone just voted it one of the top comedies of all time.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Okay, you know, granted, the second time I saw it, I liked it a lot more. And the beginning sequences were hilarious with those fake movie reviews or book reviews. Who left the fridge door open? Yeah. Okay. I've just alienated half our audience who hasn't seen that. Let's move on to our final topic because we're going to be having a good discussion about this. I recently read an article about Walter Isaacson. He was doing a talk in Amsterdam, and he was talking about his biography about Steve Jobs, but the audience took that time to kind of ask him what he thought about Steve Jobs, you know, genuinely. And it was really interesting because some of the things that he said gave a really good insight into how being with Steve Jobs for so much time affected him. And he said that in that time with Steve, he had become deeply emotionally wrapped up with him and felt awed and inspired by Steve Jobs, which I was like, that's incredible to have a biographer go in and, you know, kind of not even know this man and come out feeling so emotionally attached to him. And then recently we get this article from the Wall Street Journal about about Steve Jobs, essentially, and it was titled Successful CEOs Don't Have to Be Jerks, and it was all about that other side of Steve Jobs, you know, like that part where he would tear people down in public and really be a slave driver and, you know, be really genuinely mean to people, and he could be incredibly narcissistic. So I guess my question is, you have these two sides of Steve Jobs. Some people loved him, some people hated him. For Apple as a company, do you think that that company could have been pulled out of disaster as they were if Steve Jobs hadn't have been like the drill sergeant of technology? Like if he hadn't been as mean, if he hadn't have been as destructive, if he hadn't have been so demanding and such a perfectionist, do you think Apple would be where it is today? Leander, let's start with you.
Well, no, I mean, no, there's no way. I mean, but it's such a complex history and his story. And he did so many, things that weren't just being mean or just being tearing people down, you know, firing people in elevators. I mean, he was very, a lot of his personality traits that Isaacson is talking about and also the Wall Street Journal, you know, I mean, come together for him to save Apple. But he didn't really have a, you know, like there was no, there's not one single factor, right, that determined his success. And it wasn't just being mean or not being liked. You know, there were so many different things to say.
Yeah. Well, what about this? I mean, the title of the article says CEOs don't have to be jerks. Successful CEOs don't have to be jerks. But I kind of feel like in Apple's case, that was really kind of necessary. I mean, in order for that company to be brought out of close to bankruptcy. Alex, what do you think?
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Were you eating your P.F. Chang's?
Yeah, it was really good rice. No, no, sorry. I just, I don't know. I feel like Jobs, just in general, you know, he was narcissistic and he was, you know, hard, and but, you know, he made a better company and he made the most profitable company on earth. And I don't know, I think kind of belaboring the points of like his like two personalities and the reality distortion field and all that gets kind of, I don't know, too tedious over time. I don't know. I'm right now in the mode of like just letting his memory rest and kind of just thinking about how Apple's going to move going forward, you know?
I agree. But I think part of the point of the article was a lot of people are reading this biography and taking business insights from it. And a lot of people, myself included, I own a business and, you know, Steve Jobs is kind of a personal hero of mine. And, you know, you read this stuff and you're like, well, if Steve Jobs did XYZ, maybe I should be doing XYZ. I should be running my business this way because this is the way Steve did it.
Can't approach it that way, right?
You're not Steve.
You're not Steve, and there's no one on earth that's ever going to be Steve, you know?
No, but I mean, don't you think that if you want to be successful, you emulate people who are successful?
As a business, you can try to emulate, but like, I mean, the fact is, like, this is what was talked about in the Inside Apple book too, is how Apple operates unlike any other business on earth, and businesses try to replicate it and they can't. It's because they don't have the people. They don't have the same people. So, I mean, you can try to replicate like strategies, but if you don't have the same people behind the strategies, it's not gonna, you know, yield the same results.
Leander, you were going to say something. Sorry,
well,
go ahead.
It's to extrapolate lessons. And I had the same problem when I wrote Inside Steve's Brain, you know, because it was like, I would talk about how Steve solved a certain problem or how they came to do a certain thing. You know, here's how they developed a certain product. And, you know, I would try to sort of extrapolate the lesson. And it's almost impossible to say you need to act like Steve Jobs. You need to be decisive. You need to get in people's faces. You need to be a perfectionist. You need to have a lot of passion. You know, these are like, okay, you know, it's almost pat and trite to sort of say these things because, you know, unless you have that personality, it's impossible to impart it in someone who doesn't have that. And there are other ways of doing things. I think one of the most interesting things about saving Apple was that the situation of Apple at the time, the fact that it was going to go out of business in 90 days, gave them a huge freedom to do some crazy stuff. You know, like he canceled almost all the projects and all the products and remade them. He took it down to four products, two consumer machines and two pro machines, a laptop and a desktop in each category. And you know, that that people thought he was crazy. The board thought he was mad. They thought he was going to destroy the company. But, you know, he was able to, like, he only had four machines to work with. So one by one, you know, he reinvented them. And he started with the iMac and then the iBook. And they were all, you know, they were, it was sort of one hit product after another. And while he was doing that, he also managed to put back together marketing and operations. He got Tim Cook. You know, they closed down all their unprofitable factories. You know, he was the opportunity, because Apple was going to go out of business, he was able to remake that business from scratch with, you know, and he came in as a, with all the experience he'd had at Apple before and then at Next and at Pixar, you know, those weren't actually, you know, that successful companies, but he actually learned a lot of lessons there. And, you know, it's hard to, you look at the history of it and it's hard to extrapolate, I think, lessons. It's very difficult to extrapolate lessons, but there are some good lessons to be extrapolated. And I'm not really sure that, you know, I don't want to, it's difficult to read them from Isaacson's biography.
Yeah.
A lot of people complain there's a lot, not a lot of insight there. There's a lot of history and there's a lot of original stories, but the insight is hard to come by.
I think the biggest lesson, right, you can learn from Apple and from Jobs is that you push to break the status quo, right? Like, that's what they did. Like, you have, I mean, I think, like, the specific way that you attack it is just going to depend on who you are and what your company's like. But, I mean, what Apple did is it broke the mold and it thought ahead and it didn't let itself, you know, it wasn't restrained by the corporate culture around it. And, I mean, that's, if there's any lesson to learn, it's just kind of Apple as a whole, how Apple has operated, you know?
Right. Well, one thing's for sure. I mean, Steve died at the peak of his success, I think, right?
Well, yeah, not even the peak. I mean, just as really as like getting started.
Yeah, I mean, he was really just getting started after an already hugely successful career. So is it a moot point to argue, you know, the attributes of his personality and how, you know, those things affect business leaders? Maybe it is. Maybe it's not worth talking about. But I guarantee you this is going to be a topic of conversation for many years to come just because Apple is so incredibly successful. And, you know, Steve was a driving force in that company and in the other companies that he ran that were, you know, hugely successful, like Pixar. Granted, he had a lot less involvement in Pixar, as I understand it, and was more of an investor. But still, I mean, it just seemed like everything he touched turned to gold.
Well, he set up the company. Pixar is actually quite similar to Apple. You know, he insisted on very small teams, deep collaboration. You know, people weren't defined by their job titles, the roles that they took. You know, everyone worked together. They focused very clearly on one product at a time. You know, there was a lot of the same sort of process. It was very much like a very small startup, and he tried to maintain that at Apple too. So they're actually quite similar companies, but they wouldn't let him into any of the meetings there, especially the creative meetings at Pixar. You know, because he was sort of the same kind of
dictator.
Perfectionism that he applied at Apple, you know, was disruptive at Pixar.
And I was watching the Pixar biography. Was the Pixar biography, and there were accounts of like Steve just like screaming at people, and I mean that guy he had no care about screaming at people, yelling at people. I think one of the things I think is most intriguing to me about him, it's like, you know, you get close to somebody, you have a relationship with them, working in personal or whatever, and it's like once you develop that relationship with them, that relationship kind of inhibits you from really, you know, just going, you know, apeshit crazy on them because you have a friendship with that person, right? Like you have a rapport. But Steve didn't seem to have that filter. Like he could be really close to you, but he would still scream at you in front of other people, which seems to be something you would really only do if you were going to do it with people that you didn't know very well. It seems very strange to me that you would do that with people you'd been working with for 10 years. I mean, isn't that true to you guys? Tumbleweed?
And I was waiting for someone else to chip in. Well, you know, there's no other word for it. He was a monster.
He was a business monster, that's for sure.
But yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, you know, almost everybody has those filters. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things that came out after the Isaacson biography was that for a lot of people, it wasn't a management bible. It was a management warning. It was actually, you know, it showed people what can happen if you are so focused on, you know, your company, your products, your legacy, instead of focusing on, you know, your family, your relationships, the people you work with. And even things like charity, you know, even things like, looking after sort of the wider things around you. I mean, look what Tim Cook is doing now, addressing the issue in the supply chain in Asia, which Jobs never, ever paid attention to.
Right, yes. Tim Cook seems to be a much softer man. And, one of the things I was having a conversation with my friend the other day about Steve Jobs' last days. And the fact that, here's a man at the end of his life. He knows he's at the end of his life. And he is still focusing on his company. And to me, that just does not compute. Like, if I knew I had 30 days to live or, 60 days to live, like, my company, my business would be the very last thing on my mind. It's not that important to me, Like, I would be focused on spending all my time with my family. And that's not to say if Steve wasn't. Maybe he was. I don't know. But to have that much focus, even up until the very end, on things that you're not going to take with you when you go, it's like, that just seems totally foreign to me.
Well, that was his life, his passion. His passion was for Apple and for work and for his impact, for his historical impact. He felt, one of the interesting things when I was, when I was doing, Inside Steve's Brain and all this time, he talked a lot about death. He was obsessed with death. Even as a teenager, he was talking about death. He thought he was going to die young. He thought he was going to die before he was 30. He wanted to have an impact. That was, one of the reasons he was so driven. It's a topic that comes up constantly, and ironically, he died before his time. There's no denying the man's outsized legacy. I mean, the things that he did are astonishing.
Unmatched,
truly of a historical scale. But it exacts a penalty, I think, and he was willing to pay that penalty. But not many people have that focus or that the willingness to sacrifice all the different things that you have to sacrifice to do that, to achieve that, to have that kind of impact. Almost nobody, very, very few. Yeah. And you have to be kind of monstrous, really. You have to have something. I think there's something, got to be something a little bit off, a little bit, tweaked.
Yeah, I agree. To have that kind of, uncompromising passion and focus about one thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's not like normal people. I mean, a lot of my friends just want to go out and get drunk.
Yeah, exactly. There comes a point when you argue something, right, with people. And you just want to give up. You go, fuck it.
You're just like, I don't want to love my life. This isn't worth it anymore, right?
Right. But he would argue it until he got it, until, it was done his way. And the amount of energy, just the energy it took to do that kind of stuff is superhuman. Yeah. Now, he was a superhuman.
That's true.
Very unusual. No one, very, very few people are like him.
They should make a comic book character out of him.
Right.
Where he just stares down his enemies until they just give up and leave.
Yeah. Actually, talking of books about Jobs, there's a really good book coming out at the end of the month by Ken Siegel. He was Jobs' advertising guys and the man who named the iMac.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
So I've just been reading it. We're going to run an excerpt, an exclusive excerpt, I might add. And, it gets off to a kind of a slow start. And I was like, not so hard. But as I'm reading through, there's a ton of great anecdotes. But and it's really good at the insight, because he worked at Dell as well. So he compares and contrasts Apple and Dell, how Steve did things and how Michael Dell did things. And those really bring, the things that Steve did into focus. And I think I've learned more from this book than I did from anything I've read recently.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this book. This guy had worked with Steve for like 28 years or something. Was it Leander, right? It was a really long time.
Yeah, on and off. He was with him in the early days, and he worked with him at Next, and he worked with him, at the Think Different period.
How interesting. And when does that book come out?
It comes out on the 28th. It comes out on April the 26th, 28th.
And the title and author again, just so people hear it?
It's Ken Siegel. It's by Ken Siegel, and it's called Insanely Simple.
Insanely Simple. I definitely want to read that. I've been hearing a lot about that, actually, for quite a while. Well, hey, guys, let's wrap it up there. I love me a good Steve Jobs conversation. I know we can keep going, but we are definitely out of time for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been the CultCast, the best 30 or so minute conversation you're going to hear all week long. Hey, Alex, if I wanted to find your tweets on the internet, how would I go about doing that?
I'm all over the Twitter it's at Alex E. Heath.
Alex E. Heath, and that's H-E-A-T-H, right?
Yep.
Fantastic. And then, Leander, you're L-K-A-H-N-E-Y, L. Caney.
Yep, that's it.
And Buster's B-S-T-3-R. I have that memorized now. And I'm just Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And of course, you can always follow Cult of Mac. That's just Cult of Mac on Twitter for all the news and other stuff that we broadcast every day. Thanks for listening. Cultcast comes back every Thursday night. We will catch you guys next week. Clear!
All right, cool.
Good one, Gov. Do people in the UK call each other Gov sometimes, Leander?
Oh, yeah, cool. So the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love it. Do you know where that originated from?
One who governs?
Yeah. But why would you say it to one who was not governing you?
It's like saying, oh, hey, boss, I guess. Geez,
exactly, yeah. And it's in England, it's just, you know, it's either you're governed or you're governing.
Oh, really?
Class society. America's, that's where the original 1% comes from.
How funny. All right, guys. Well, good show. Good show. There's another one. I didn't even mean to do that.